Today, if you have your journal, go ahead and pull your journal out or pull your program out as we walk through this journey of bold and as we take our next step in understanding this journey of bold. And today, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the idea of being bold to surrender. If you remember last week, I said bold to sacrifice is giving up something you love for something you love more. And today we're going to talk about this understanding of surrender and what surrender really is, because there's a little bit of a difference between these two. And here's the definition of surrender. I found this when I went through looking online for definitions. And the definition of surrender: cease resistance to an enemy or opponent and submit to their authority. To cease resistance to an enemy or opponent and submit to their authority. Now, when you look at this and you see this idea and understanding, I don't know about you, but all of a sudden, there's some hair on the back of my neck that starts to stand up. And part of it may be because of the word cease resistance, because I lived in a can-do society, and many of you live in that same society. If somebody said to you, you cannot become president of the United States, then you are one of those people that said, okay, then I'll prove you wrong. If somebody said, you can't get an education, many of you in the room said, well, I proved him wrong. I went and got an education. And some of us said, you can't do this. So I went and did this. And we live in a society, we live in a place where so many of us love to do and say, hey, I proved everybody wrong. They told me I couldn't do it, and I went and did it. And if you're wondering why we have this resistance, and for many of us, surrender is not a word we like to use. If you go to Google and you look up any word, you can go down and find the analytics of how often that word's used. And if you look at the analytics from the year 1800, where we first find this word surrender in the American in the English dictionary, you start to see this happen. And here's the deal. Look at the analytics of how much the word surrender has decreased since the 1800s. We don't want to use the word, do we? I mean, the deal is that there was a time when we'd say, okay, we've given everything we got. We cease to resist anymore. We're going to give in to this. But you and I today have this thing inside of us that whenever we hear the phrase surrender, are you willing to surrender? There's something in us, an independence in us, a sense of freedom that says, don't tell me I can't do this. Don't tell me I can't make this happen. And because of it, the word surrender seems like a foreign concept to us. And if you're using it less and less, notice this, that people in society are using this word less and less. And today, I want to talk about this idea of surrender and where we're going to go today. If you have a Bible, you can open it up to the book of Genesis. And we're going to camp out today in Genesis chapter 22. But let me give you a little backstory of what happens, because today is your story. There is a part of your story. I don't know how many of you, when you were in a little kid, maybe growing up, if your grandma and grandpa brought you to church or you went to church somewhere, there was a song, if you were in kids ministry, that went something, that was a song called Father Abraham. Show of hands, how many people in this room and all of our rooms ever heard that song, Father Abraham, okay? Who wants to demonstrate? No, just kidding. If you remember that song, it was a song of activity, right? And so there was a season in my life where I was a youth pastor, and part of my job was being a children's pastor as a piece of that. And we loved Father Abraham. And the reason that we love Father Abraham was because if you're a youth pastor, it gets your kids moving. And if you've got first grade boys or second grade boys, they love it. Because if you remember, the part of that song was you move your right arm, you move your left arm, you move your right leg, move your left leg, you spin around. And the thing about it, whenever I would do it, is the first and second grade boys wouldn't just spin around, but it turned into the equivalent of a high school mosh pit. You know, and so they would bounce as they would spin so hard that they'd bounce off their buddy, and then their buddy would bounce off another buddy, and then somewhere along the way, they'd bounce into that nice little precious, sweet little first grade girl that was like wearing a dress, and she was so prissy, and then all of a sudden she falls down, she starts crying, and so I had to limit the song to once a month because somebody always got hurt, right? And I thought, man, but you may not understand the background of that song. You see, Abraham was a guy that came on the scene, and God showed up one day and he said to Abraham, here's the deal. I want you to pack up everything you got, and here's the thing. I'm going to take you to some place that I'm not going to tell you where it is right now. Anybody there? Maybe you're thinking, what's my next step? God, what are you asking me to do next? Because quite honestly, I would prefer for that step to already be taken and for that to happen. And God said, here's the deal. You're packing everything up. You're going to become a nomad, and I'm going to send you to a place that you don't know where you're going to go yet. And then when there was a time that Abraham finally would arrive in that place. And along the journey, he ends up meeting a gal, and her name becomes Sarah, and they get married. And then God says, hey, here's the deal. You're going to have a kid, and that kid's going to impact millions upon millions of people. That kid, as a matter of fact, you're going to have so many heirs that there will be more heirs than there are stars in the sky, sands of grain on the ocean. You are going to have so many people. Every nation on the earth is going to be blessed because of you, Abraham. God tells him that at the age of 75. I want to pause for a moment because I would venture to say that there's some of you in the room that are approaching or somewhere around the age of 75. And tonight, if you're sleeping and God wakes you up and says, guess what? You're having a baby. I've known enough 75-year-olds that don't get excited about that opportunity. And here's the reason why. You tell me you would rather have grandkids than have kids, right? Because here's the best part. You know, grandkids, you get to bring them over, you get to spoil them, you get to have fun with them, you get to do all those things. And then just as they're just getting annoying, you send them back home to mom and dad, right? And then you basically, in the back of your mind, say, man, I am so glad we're getting even from all those times that kid drove us nuts. And this is an opportunity. And so if God came to you and said, hey, here's the deal. You're 75. You're going to have a baby. We know that your wife's 65. She's going to have a baby. And it's going to come. And someday you're going to get pregnant. And so I don't know about you, but I don't know if Abraham was overly excited in that moment. But in the process of it, God said, I'm going to bless you a ton. Now, not only did it not happen at 75 for Abraham, it didn't happen at 85, it didn't happen at 95. 20 years into this, he still doesn't have an heir. Even somewhere along the way, Abraham decided to take matters into his own hands, and his wife comes to him and says, hey, I've got this servant and this maidservant, and she would be one that, and so Abraham's like, sure, you know, if you want me to, I guess I can have a kid with her. And so Abraham does, and God said, that's not the one. That's not the one that's going to happen here. And so Abraham continues to wait. Have you ever waited for something for 25 plus years? Then you understand what Abraham had to go through. So a little boy named Isaac is born when Sarah's 90 and Abraham's 100. Wow. The story that we're going to talk about today gets picked up about approximately 15 years after this. So Sarah would have been somewhere around the age of about 105. Abraham would have been around the age of about 115. And there's this conversation that takes place. And Abraham's like, okay, Isaac, you're the heir. Everything's going to come through you. Some incredible things are going to happen because of you. And then all of a sudden, in Genesis chapter 22, if you have a Bible, follow along with us because you won't miss this on the Bible app. But in Genesis chapter 22, listen to what happens in this moment. Sometime later, it says, God tested Abraham's faith. Abraham, God called. Yes, he replied, here I am. Take your son, your only son, yes, Isaac, whom you love so much, and go to the land of Moriah. Go and sacrifice him as a burnt offering on one of the mountains which I will show you. The next morning, Abraham got up early. He saddled his donkey, took two of his servants with him, along with his son Isaac. He chopped wood for a fire for a burnt offering and set out for a place that God had told him about. On the third day of their journey, Abraham looked up, saw the place in the distance. He said, stay here with the donkey, Abraham told his servants. The boy and I will travel a little further. We will worship there and then we'll come right back. So Abraham placed the wood for the burnt offering on Isaac's shoulders, while he himself carried the fire and the knife. And as the two of them walked on together, Isaac turned to his dad and he said, Father, yes, my son, we have fire and we have wood, but where is the sheep for the burnt offering? And Abraham said, God will provide a sheep. When they arrived at the place where God had told them to go, Abraham built the altar, and Abraham picked up the knife. Then he tied his son Isaac to the altar, laid him on the altar on top of the wood, and Abraham picked up the knife to kill his son as a sacrifice. And at that moment, the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven, Abraham, Abraham. Yes, Abraham replied, here I am. Don't lay a hand on the boy. Do not hurt him in any way, for now I know you truly fear God. You've not withheld from me even your son, your only son. You have to understand that while many of us in this room see that as so foreign to us, in this day and age, it was a pretty common thing for you to have a God and for that God to say, give me your firstborn. But even in the course of the commonness of it, can you imagine in that moment the things that Abraham's got to be running through his mind? I've waited 100 years for this child. You told me 25 years before he was even born that this was the heir. You told me this was the one. I waited all this time, and now here you are. You're asking me to go and sacrifice the only kid that's supposed to carry everything behind us? I got to tell you, as a dad, this is a pretty tall order. And for any of us in the room who see this or recognize this, there's an internal struggle inside of us. And quite honestly, the word that you saw in surrender, resistance, becomes the first word that most of us think in this moment. But what's so unique about this story? What is it that Abraham did to surrender to God so that you and I would have this conversation today? And here's why I'm saying it's such an important conversation, because according to the book of Ephesians, you and I have been grafted in because we've said yes to Jesus. And so all of the rights of sonship of all of Israel, which Abraham was the father of Israel, all of the rights of sonship and daughtership, every one of us in the room get the privilege of those rights. And so this story isn't just some story of somebody somewhere along the way. It is your story. And there's a reason behind the significance of this story. And the reason for you to understand as we walk through this journey is to recognize, because of Abraham's surrender and his willingness to surrender, you and I get the privilege of sitting in this room today and saying that we said yes to Jesus, that that opportunity is existing for every single one of us. So what is it that Abraham did to help him surrender to God? The first thing was this: he said yes. He said yes. He was willing to say yes. Look at the very first words in Genesis chapter 2. Look at what happened. Sometime later, God tested Abraham's faith. He said, Abraham, God called. And what does Abraham say? Yes, here I am. Now, I don't know about you, but this idea of saying yes is something that most of us say, oh, I'm good at saying yes. I say yes all the time. I mean, I'm just a yes man. People tell me that I'm Mr. Yes everywhere I go. And I don't know about you, but I would have said that I'm a person who says yes a lot. And yet I've learned over the course of the last several months that I don't say yes nearly as often as I think I say yes. Maybe you're the same way. I had the privilege a couple of weeks ago when Brent was preaching to take my son to dad camp. And if you've never had this opportunity, dads, it's a great opportunity for you and your son to go, or your daughter to go and take basically from Friday evening until Sunday afternoon, a 48-hour window or plus to be able to go and just spend a time. And so we get there Friday night, and Jason Braun, the director of dad camp, gets in, and the boys go out to play. And so the dads are sitting around in this room, and he goes, dads, here's the deal. The first thing I want to say to you, the number one rule that we have at dad camp is for you to say yes. And I thought, how easy that's going to be. And I thought, man, I say yes all the time. And it wasn't until a few minutes later that there we were out and we were playing and my son wanted to do something. And I was like, son, are you serious? We want to do this? I mean, there was like this human foosball thing that we were trying to play. And my son loves kicking people in the shins all the time. And he's like, Dad, this is a great opportunity. We get to do this, and we get to do it in a legal game. And I'm like, are we sure we want to do this? And so we're out there, and I remember the guy going, he said, say yes, so we'll say yes. And so there we go. And then I was reminded a few months ago that while I was sitting in our house, and I was having, literally just sitting there, not doing hardly anything, and my wife was doing something else, that one of our children walked right by me over to my wife, and they asked her a question, and she said, look, I'm busy. Why in the world are you asking me? And the child looked back at me, and they said, you know why? Because Dad always says no. Ouch. And so I determined I was going to say yes to my son all weekend long. We wake up. We're getting ready. And I said, son, you ready for bacon? Because my son loves bacon. He gets 5 orders of it when he's here. And we have a rule that he can only have as many orders as he is old. So he just turned 6. And so 6 orders of bacon. So I, for those of you in the room, some of you are frustrated. Others of you are jealous. And so that's good. But my son loves bacon. And so I was telling him, I said, man, you know, are you ready for the bacon? And he goes, no, dad, you know what sounds good today? And I said, what's that? And he goes, s'mores. We need s'mores for breakfast. I said, yes. We're the only guys sitting out at a campfire at 8:30 in the morning. And they're like, what are you guys doing with marshmallows? And we're like, we're having s'mores. It's breakfast. And so then we get there in the afternoon, and my son's like, you know, hey, dad, let's go canoeing. Now, any of you in the room that knows anything about the weather we've had in the last 9 years that it hasn't rained, and so we're supposed to take a canoe in a creek that no longer exists. And he's like, let's do it. And, well, the guy said yes, so I say yes. And so we get down in this canoe, and literally we go 50 feet, and all of a sudden I hear this, and we're scraping on rocks, and I'm like, oh my goodness, we got like another 7 miles to go here. And so I get out of the boat, I push it a little bit, and we go. Then the next thing I see is people passing us left and right, you know, and because every 50 feet I stop, because if you know anything about a canoe, you know that there's this idea of weight arrangement. When you got a 6-year-old son and dad's in the back, the canoe's like this. It's not like this, right? And so he's like on a speedboat, and he's like, this is great, this is great. And I'm like, look, son, this ain't great, okay? And so we get about like, I don't know, maybe 1/4 mile into this, and then we have this guy, he's new to Crossroads, his name's Jason Bush, and he finally comes up, and he's like, Pastor, you look like you need some help. And I'm like, dude, I need more than help right now. And so he's like, look, I will stay with you. And so then he became parishioner of the year. We've never had that before, but because... He basically would get out of the boat and push me along the way. But the point was to say yes. And here's the problem. Most of us in the room may say, I say yes all the time. But really examine yourself and ask, do I say yes? And then here's the second piece. Because I know hundreds of people who said yes to Jesus, but they never moved towards their yes. See, here's the thing. I watch people say yes. I want this. I want the sacrifice that Christ gives. I want this in my life. And yet what they do is they pause in that moment and they never move towards their yes. Abraham was such a big deal. He's listed a number of times, mentioned a number of times in the New Testament. And even this incident is mentioned a number of times in the New Testament. And in James chapter 2, listen to what it says. It says, and so it happened, just as the scriptures say, that Abraham believed God and God counted him as righteous because of his faith. But it doesn't stop there. Listen to how he concludes this verse. He was even called the friend of God. So you see, we are shown to be right with God by what we do, not by faith alone. Moving on your yes is a pretty big deal. Some of you have said yes to Jesus and you've never made a move. Some of us say yes to stuff and then we don't do anything about it. Someday I'm going to do that. Yes, I said yes. I'm going to do this. Some of us say yes in a marriage and then what do? We just sit and that's all we do. We said yes. I said yes to you. That's good enough. And if it ever changes, I'll let you know. But the problem is we don't move on our yes. The third thing that he did, not only did he move on his yes, but he did this. He trusted God even if it doesn't make sense. This is a tough one for some of us. And part of the reason that this is tough is because you're willing to say yes to a lot of things, but if it comes to things like your finances, you're saying, you know what, I'm not going to say yes to that. I have retirement, and so I want to keep that over here. Or God, I've got this savings account, and I really don't want to touch the savings account. God, I got these things here, and I really don't want to, God, because I would much rather take care of those things. I give you some, and there's some of this stuff that I do give you, but why in the world would I trust you enough? God, I appreciate you, and you do so much, and I trusted you with eternity, but I'm not going to trust you with the here and now, the things that are right in front of me. The Hebrew writer in Hebrews 11:9 describes this as he's talking about Abraham in this way. In 11:19, he says, Abraham reasoned that if Isaac died, God was able to bring him back to life again. And in a sense, Abraham did receive his son back from the dead. Can you believe this much trust? That he was sitting there and he was saying, God, I'm going to say yes. And so he walks out there, and can you imagine the 3-day journey that they're having to this place? I don't know about you, but if God said to me, your son needs to be sacrificed, am I going to hop in a car and drive somewhere for 3 days and the entire time think to myself, how crazy of a God do I serve that he's willing to sacrifice the one thing that I've waited for all of these years? And yet we do this all the time. And you're saving for the big time, for the house in Florida, for the thing that you've always wanted, and you go through those things and you're like, God, why would I trust you with this? Because I want to do this on my own. And for any of us in the room that are wrestling with this, with any of us in any room that we're a part of and we're wrestling with this, can I just say thank you? Because you're not alone in this wrestling. You're not alone in this. My wife and I, we've been walking through this journey and trying to figure out what are we going to trust God in bold to say, God, this is the case. You see, bold is what every one of us give. That's the idea. This isn't a piece of the puzzle, but it is the puzzle of Crossroads for the next 2 years. Every dime that you give to Crossroads in the next 2 years goes to bold. And for my wife and I, we've been talking about this. We've even gone as far as to say, okay, let's pray. And then so we prayed and we thought of a number and we looked at it. We both kind of agreed to the number. And then after that, we're like, I don't know if that's the case. And we prayed and then we decided, hey, let's do this number thing. We did again. And the next thing you know, we don't agree now with the number. And we're like, oh. And so one of us has lots of faith. One of us has no faith. And we're like, oh, how are we going to deal with this? How are we going to figure this out? Why? Because we're struggling with this trusting God thing. I want to tell you a story, and you're going to have the opportunity to see two really good friends of mine, a couple of individuals that were sitting here at our South Kokomo campus just last service, some people that have been a part of Crossroads decades who are in this same place right now, who are going to tell you a little bit about their situation and the struggles they're having and trying to figure this thing out. I just want us to talk a little bit about this wrestling thing. So let me introduce to you on our screens my friends Mike and Bethany Taylor.
Hi, I'm Mike. This is Bethany. We've been at Crossroads. I've been there my whole life. Bethany's been there since we got married 42 years ago. So since I've been there my whole life, I've seen the transition from 30 people all the way up to where we are now, and all the buildings and opportunities in between. So one thing about Crossroads is we've been able to meet the needs of the people, and if we needed to change a little bit, we did. So if we needed to add on, or if we needed to add a class or add a pastor, whatever the need was, we were able to meet it.
Camp has always been one of our defining moments. We met at camp, and it's always been very important to us, and still is, even though we're too old to go now. And Action Packed is my other, because that brought one of my kids back, because Action Packed brought Marcy's son, and then that brought Marcy back.
Yeah, defining moment for me, I guess, when we added the children's ministry years and years ago back in the basement of the old church, and the fact that we focused on the kids, and those kids are now adults and they have kids. So one of the things that we talk about at Crossroads is legacy, and the people that started it and the people that taught us, and then we turn around and teach other people, and that's what Crossroads is all about, is to, you know, raise people up to know the Lord, and that's what our church has always done. Yeah, leaving a legacy, you know, I've never really thought about that, but it's, you know, what people think of you, and it doesn't really matter except where you are in God's eyes, right? So if your legacy is something that people don't want to talk about, that's it's one thing. But if it's something that you've been able to help the church and help the people over the years, then I think that's a good thing.
I just want to know all my kids are going to be in heaven with me, and my grandkids, and we want people to know, and when we die, we don't want people to stand around thinking, I wonder if they made it to heaven or not. I want them to know that that's where I'm at.
Yeah, my aunt and uncle, Frank and Mary Alice Jackson, They actually invited my parents, even before I was born, to back then Oakford, but now Crossroads, and the legacy lives on as my parents, and then us, and then our kids, and now our grandkids are there. So that's it's home. So, and you know, we talked about transitioning into retirement. That's one thing that we've been talking about, and the bold giving that we, you know, we're going to give. And you know, we've always been able, no matter what campaign it is, but as we transition into retirement, our finances are changing, and we're not sure, you know, what we're going to be making next year versus what we're making this year, and how much you know, the Lord's leaving us to give. But it'll be something. So that's kind of where we are. Is we're nervous, but you know, we know that God has always provided, and we're gonna be bold.
We're still trying to process because we don't know, you know, we haven't figured out how much money we're going to have next year. We know that we're not going to be able to give what we gave the last 2 years. And so we can't just sit down and say, okay, we gave this much times two and then add some more, because we know we're not going to have that much. But we're still wrestling with, what do you want us to give, God?
Well, I think surrendering to God, I mean, you pray and you ask, you know, and you know, when you get a prayer answered, you just know it. You feel it. You know that that's what God is saying to you. It may be saying it through somebody else. It may be saying it through somebody on the street. But you'll know that, hey, this is what God wants you to do. And we've had some tough times in the past few years, and you know, we've gone through some things that if the church hadn't been there, we wouldn't have made it. And that's one thing that you know, Crossroads has always been there for us. And so we're always going to be there for Crossroads. So.
Wrestling that Mike and Bethany are doing, and the wrestling that many of us do in this. You know, several years ago, God asked me to do something that was very bold, and it was the most boldest thing that I've ever done financially in my life. And the problem was that it was going to require for me even giving up retirement. And I remember having a conversation with my accountant, saying, "This is the worst decision ever. You're going to pay so much money in this." And I went back to God and I said, "God, you're asking me to do this. You're asking me to give a significant gift to a ministry that I know you want to do something with." And I did. In the course of that time, went ahead and moved forward with it. And then a couple of years later, I get a conversation from a friend of mine as they're telling me about the conversion of an entire tribe of unreached people. And he was just saying, "Hey, thank you. Because of the fact that you sacrificed, we now know that there are 25,000 people today who said yes to Christ that would not have said yes to Christ unless you folks would have sacrificed in that." Trusting God even when it doesn't make sense seems so tough for us. And that's why the fourth thing that happens in this, that we see for Abraham in this, is that God always comes through. He always comes through. You saw this in this process, that there he was in the moment getting ready to do this. And quite honestly, that would have separated Jehovah from no other gods. He would have been the same had he gone through this. But God said, "Nope, this is the deal. I just want to know how much you trusted me." In Genesis chapter 22, the very next two verses, listen to what happens. "Then Abraham looked up, and he saw a ram caught by its horns in a thicket." Think about that. I mean, right after this, and the angel says, "Stop!" And then Abraham looks around, and for many of you, you'd be like, "And guess what? I couldn't believe it. There's a ram in the thicket. How lucky am I?" But Abraham knew exactly what it was. So he took the ram, he sacrificed it as a burnt offering in place of his son, and Abraham named the place Yahweh Yireh, which means "the Lord will provide." And to this day, people still use that name as a proverb. On the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. Yahweh Yireh, the Lord will provide. Let me ask you, when has that ever happened to you? When have you ever had a time in your life that you can look back on, and not a life of somebody you know or a family member or something along the way, but have you ever had that time where you said, God, I'm going to sacrifice here, and not just your time, but financially, I'm willing to give up, and this Yahweh Yireh, the Lord will provide. How have you ever had that opportunity to do that? Most of us resist that. Most of us prefer to be in a place where we're uncomfortable and we know what's happening and we're prepared for this issue or for that issue. But this understanding of it, and I believe even as we read through this, that this idea that God always comes through, and he does. And so I want to ask you, what areas in your life can you not say that I believe that God will come through, that the Lord will provide? On what mountain of the Lord can you say it will be provided? Then here's what happens if you're willing to do that, is the final thing. And the final thing is this, that God blessed Abraham for boldly surrendering to him. You go down the next couple of verses, and here's what happens in the next couple of verses. It says, I will certainly bless you, God says. I will multiply your descendants beyond number, like the stars in the sky and the sand on the seashore. Your descendants will conquer the cities of their enemies, and through your descendants, all the nations of the earth will be blessed, all because you have obeyed me. You are sitting in this church today because Abraham was willing in that day to make the sacrifice that he was. Because let me give you a little backstory of what happens. Abraham steps back. Isaac goes and has a child by the name of Jacob. Jacob has a tons of sons, and they eventually rename Jacob, a guy by the name of Israel, and he has 12 sons. They turn into the 12 tribes of Israel, and then we go along and fast forward, and on this very mountain, which is interesting, we know of three significant events that occurred on this mountain. The first one is here in this sacrifice. The second significant event happens 1,000 years later when a guy by the name of David, who is a king, comes along, and he feels the call of God to begin to put together a temple, and he's so moved that he sacrifices on this exact same mountain because he believes that God's calling him to build a temple, and his son Solomon would eventually build what was called Solomon's Temple, and the Israelite nation would celebrate this incredible feat. And then in that very same spot, in that very same mountain, somewhere on the top of that mountain, when the temple was destroyed and a new one was built, and it wasn't very far from that temple, that there was a hill, and on that hill, many believe that that was the very place that possibly Jesus died. Three significant events that you and I today come and we celebrate, all because God blessed Abraham, who boldly surrendered to him. You know, I said this earlier on, but I want to say this today as we conclude. Because the opposite of surrender is to resist. So what are you resisting? And think about it. Because right now, I know that for many of us, there's an uncomfortability that's happening inside of us. Because we're sitting here going, man, gosh, this really is a struggle for me. I said yes to Jesus, thank you so much. But the idea of just giving this up or this up, that's really a tough one for me. I bring this card out because I know that for a lot of us, we mentioned to you to be praying daily about this card and what God may be calling you to give. And I know for a lot of us, there's a resistance behind it, isn't there? Because you look at this and you say, God, that's getting too personal. You're really getting in my space right here. And we're struggling with this. And on the inside, you looked at it maybe for a moment, you're like, oh man, I mean, I'll just give you what I always give you, because that's the thing and that's the deal. And we don't wrestle with what's happening on the inside. You know, we've talked about it from the beginning that the idea is to get nearly 100% of us as possible involved. What does it look like for every single one of us, including kids, to get involved in this? And one of the things that I love about this card is you'll notice that there's a spot on here that says gifts from my or our stored resources. I don't know about you, but all of us probably have, a lot of us have things that just lay around that we once thought, man, I got to have that. Now you don't need it anymore. or you know that there were things that maybe you can look back and say, we saved 25 years to have this thing happen. And now you're at a place where you're going, you know what? It really is okay, but quite honestly, it's not really what we thought it would be. It's not as much, and we really spent all this, and now what are we thinking? And you may have some stored resource, whether it's a car in a garage or a house, or maybe for you, your stored resource may be some kind of a financials where you've just continued to grow your stocks and you continue to make them bigger, or you're growing your piles and you're saying, someday I'll be a part of it. And this idea of resistance, of resisting comes in, and you hear a message like this and you're saying, man, I don't want to give up my stored resources. I don't want to give these things up. I think I'm going to need them someday. And all of us about something along the way that we have something in there that we look back and say, someday I might need that. Someday I'm going to use this. Someday I'm going to have that happen. You're like me. You still have a pair of jeans from high school that you keep thinking, someday I'll fit in these again, right? And you're now 78 sizes bigger than you were in high school. But you're thinking, someday. But I want to put this on a personal note. Because when you hear us talk about nearly 100% engagement, I know that for some of us, this is an opportunity to engage. Because you have stored resources that maybe God's given you as this place. That we've had this conversation with our kids and have had this conversation with other kids. Because many of us have certain electronics and we've replaced our electronics and handed down our hand-me-downs to our kids, but we've done that a couple of times now, and now you have cell phones that are sitting in a drawer somewhere, and for you, your kids see them, and they're just like, hey, and everybody has an extra cell phone or two laying around, and that's kind of normal for us. The idea that we've been challenging our children to say, what does it look like for you to give up your stored resources? Is there something that you have that you know others could benefit from? And so all the way from kids to those of us who are adults. And this is a wrestling that takes place. The trusting of God that it's going to be enough for you. And so here's what I'm going to ask today. We're going to close out this message in a different kind of way. And I'm going to ask for two responses today. And the first response I'm going to ask is that here at South Campus, you look to the corners of our stage and you'll see crosses at both of those corners, and in that, you'll see some big buckets that are there. Now, the idea of surrendering is raising the white flag. And if you're at our Crossroads North Kokomo location, you'll see a picture of Jesus, and you'll see some flags that are located there. And the idea for us is this, is that we're going to have this visual moment. We want to have this opportunity of what does it look like for me to step out and for myself, for my wife, and for us to plant a flag and say, today I surrender. Jesus, today I'm surrendering. I'm giving this to you. I'm going to stop the resistance. I'm going to stop saying, let's fight about this. Let's do this. But today I'm raising the white flag, and Jesus, I'm raising it for you. What does that look like for you? I know that for some of us right now, you're sitting in your seat and you're thinking, man, the seat's awful comfortable. I don't see me getting up out of the seat. I don't see me stepping out. But this idea of surrender is one that all of us have this resistance that wants to be around us, that wants to be there.